If you're having some issues with your computer or with your computer software, I hope you'll stay tuned. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today to give you some advice on your computer. And frankly, even if you don't have a problem right now, we usually talk about issues that can develop for your computer. So I hope you'll stay with us. And give us a call if you do have a question. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
We'll start with an email. We have Nancy from Sun Prairie who wonders, is there an easy way to change my new email address to all in my address book and other contacts?
Well, there's a number of ways to do it. You know, some of it depends on what software you have that you're using, but I'll give you the general guidelines that you can use. For people that don't have a lot of contacts, you know, you might just say, okay, I'm going to click them and mail them individually. For people that have a lot of contacts, and that could be, let's say, anywhere from a dozen to several hundred or even 1,000, one, you could export the list, and you want to do that so it's separated by typically a semicolon.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you can do is cut and paste that entire list and put it into an email that you are mailing to yourself, okay?
Oh.
And so it's from you to you, but you're BCCing it to everybody else.
Ah.
So which BCC, I actually took a typing class, Larry, when I was in high school.
I did too.
BCC is blind carbon copy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still used in email. And that way, the people that get the email don't see anybody else.
Right.
What is not good net etiquette is to CCC, you know, or CC everybody in your contact list so everybody sees who's on your contact list.
Yeah.
So if you haven't paid attention to when you're sending an email and then you're CCing it to somebody, but you don't want that other person to know that another person's getting an email, use the BCC part. So you can export the list and cut and paste it to that. It's got to be separated, and typically it's a semicolon, so the comma and the dot and a space. Another thing is, you know, setting up a group that has all your contacts, or not necessarily all your contacts, but the contacts, you know, maybe family group and a friend group.
Right.
And a social group or whatever, but you can set up groups within typical email systems, and whether it's on your desktop or if you're using a web-based email like Yahoo or Hotmail or Gmail and so forth. You know, just keep it short.
Yeah.
Realize that the real estate that you're using is pretty precious to most people, and a lot of people are getting it on their iPhone or BlackBerry or, you know, a cell phone that's internet-enabled to get their email. So realize that you might have just a little piece of real estate that, you know, people are peering at that email, and you want to catch their attention, but you don't want to take, you know, so much that they're like, oh, I'll read this later, because maybe it might be actually important that they know that, you know, they should make note of your new change.
Here's another one. Lisa from La Crosse wonders or says there's a currently nasty virus that seems to be linked to Facebook use. Any suggestions on how to avoid it, and if you get it, how to get rid of it?
You know, there's a lot of things that keep popping up, and we were just talking about this, that, you know, antivirus programs are not 100% effective. They're 99 point whatever percent, because the companies that are out there that create this software to, you know, potentially guard your system from somebody getting in, don't know about the latest and greatest attempts to breach security until someone breaches the security and that person actually becomes, you know, a sacrificial lamb, and then they figure out, okay, how do we protect this person from, you know, getting having their system infected? So one, you know, is really trying to keep your antivirus updated as best as possible. The other is, you know, having a sense of your computer's personality. And what I mean about that is if something starts popping up on your screen or is out of the ordinary, with the way some of these things react, I almost say just shut it off. Mm-hmm. Because some of them are clever enough that if you say no, it means yes. And if you say yes, it means yes. So no matter what you do, it's the wrong answer. So I've seen, I think I talked about one a couple within the last couple of months. I forgot what it was called, but it basically disabled all the functionalities of the Windows operating system, including bringing it up to the safe mode. You couldn't do Control-Alt-Delete to get to the task manager. All you could do is watch them say they were doing a scan of your system and you had this many problems and issues and we can fix them for you. Click here. And there was basically nothing else you could do. I ended up taking the drive out of the computer and scanning it three different times. And then it had also compromised different parts of the operating system where the restore function no longer worked. And I believe the task manager no longer works. So there, I had to go into the registry and actually make some changes to bring the system back up rather than saying, okay, I'm going to wipe it clean and redo it again. Because some of these things mutate and they may tag along on, you know, data files
right.
that you need off of the system. So I'm not a real fan of redoing, you know, a computer with Windows from scratch and then restoring it. And I've talked about this years ago. We had one of my neighbors called up a company and said, well, you should redo your system. And I said, no, we need to disinfect it and then bring it back to the way it should be and see how it performs because we have no idea if any of your data has been compromised. And then if we put that back on, we're back
just
in the same...
Right back in the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm real, really strong on, you know, disinfection and carrying it through to rid the system. Sometimes I had one computer that I actually threw up my hands on. And I said, you know, it had like over 10,000 infections on it. And I said, you know what? I'm going to ask the end user, you know, is there anything you really need on this computer? And the answer is no, just, you know, wipe it clean. I'm like, okay, then, you know, I mean, 10,000 infections, a lot of infections to have a scanner go through and try and, you know, get rid of it. And it wasn't pretty, but we started over and, you know, there were new rules to play by on that system. And it's been fine for years.
Patty in Madison has a question for you. Patty, hello.
Hi, guys. I'm glad you remember typewriters. My question.
I still have one.
What's it?
I still have one.
I got rid of mine when I moved, and I kind of regret it. But anyway, I learned how to do word processing using DOS.
Mm-hmm.
And every time software is so-called upgraded, they get rid of keyboard shortcuts. They force you to use the mouse unless you want to write a whole bunch of macros. And recently, I bought a Dell network. I got laid off. I'm starting my own business, so I just wanted a little thing to do some word processing on, so I bought Microsoft Word Office 2007. Everything is the mouse. It's just horrible. And I don't do that much word processing, but it sure would be nice if I could make it look and work just like Microsoft. I think the last one was 2003 or 97. My sister told me that there's some product you can get that you can run at the same time, and it'll make Microsoft 2007 look and work, you know, have the drop-down menus, all that good stuff where
right.
you can do Alt-F instead of using mm-hmm. the mouse. Make it work just like that, and I've got two questions. First of all, do you know about this product? And if you do, would I be able to use it on my small Dell netbook,
correct me if I'm wrong, you're kind of limited with memory and disk space?
That's right.
You have like maybe 1 gig of RAM?
You know, I don't know the number.
Is it fairly new?
It is new. Yeah. I just bought it a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But it's a dual, I mean, it's a mono drive.
Mm-hmm. How long does it take for 2007 Word to open up, start up?
It opens up right when I click on it.
Okay. Okay, as far as the product goes, I don't know about it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it actually exists because, you know, I feel the same way you do. I remember being asked in a class where we were training the trainers, you know, my topic was to teach a person how to use a Windows-based accounting system without using the mouse.
Well, you know, if you're a good typist,
it gets
really
in the way.
It's really down to have you take your hands off the keyboard.
Absolutely. So how do you find out about new products or add-ons and things like that? One would be Microsoft has a group of individuals that are called MVPs, most valuable professionals that work with and are certified on the Microsoft products. And there's a website called MVPS, I believe it's .org. I have a link to it on, if you go to infostar.com, on the left-hand side, go to the Virus Info Center page, and on the top part where you see, I believe it's forums, you'll see a link there for MVPS. And they also have what's called a big list, which basically is a list of all the different professionals that are certified in their different products.
Okay.
So you'll find at least, I'm guessing, a handful or more of people that are certified with the Word stuff, and they may have even come up with, you know, what you're looking for. The other thing is to do some, you could spend time searching on Google, or you could just go to some of the key sites that would have something like that. One would be cnet.com, cnet.com. And they also have a shareware site where there might be products out there that you can download for free and try and evaluate. I'm just trying to think of another one. Probably Simtel, SIMTEL.com. And there might be, you might want to do a Google search and type in Microsoft Word add-on 2007 and see what comes up.
Okay.
If Word works fine on your netbook, I wouldn't be concerned with, you know, adding something on, because if anything, it'll probably make Word quicker, because it'll be cutting to the chase to do the things you want.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more of your calls now, and let's go to Peter in Stoughton with a question. Peter, hello.
Good morning. Hi. I guess it's the day to talk about keyboards and typing and all that sort of thing. I have kind of an interesting problem. my computer came with a wireless keyboard, and the batteries in it are good, and for some reason, the scroll and page up and down keys have become just about non-functional. If you hit the key for scroll down, it goes all the way to the bottom of the page and then freezes there. And likewise with page up and page down, those keys, it will go all the way. The only way you can scroll a page is to do it with your mouse. Now, I thought, okay, this is just the problem with this wireless keyboard that came with the unit. So I plugged in a USB keyboard, and it does the same thing. And I've tried System Restore, and I'm wondering if there's some other thing I could be doing to get the functionality of these keys back.
So you're saying that the actual problem is repeating itself, whether it's wireless or hardwired into the system.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like there's a problem with the operating system and the keyboard functionality, and the only way to see if you can actually fix it through software is to do, you know, a repair. So Because I would say, okay, you know, before you said it was hardwired, maybe updating the drivers, doing a reset and seeing if it's the wireless communication. But then you're saying
it doesn't work
mm-hmm. or works the same way, whether it's hardwired or wireless.
I don't know if this makes a difference, but this is when I'm on the internet. I haven't tried it with anything other than the internet, but that's obviously something you need on the internet.
Okay. Just trying to think of which Windows are you using?
XP Home.
XP Home. Okay. And have you kept it up to date?
I've gotten all the Microsoft updates and such.
Okay.
If that's what you mean.
All right.
Yeah.
If I would try and see first if the functionality is still a problem with the keyboard in other programs. In other words, that it crosses all, that it's just not internet or web browser related,
mm-hmm.
but it's an issue with other programs. Because
okay.
then it's really permeating through the operating system. So if it's a problem with other products, other software on your computer, then I would say try to do a Windows repair. If it's not across other products, then I would say try to update the browser. Have you tried it with two different browsers, or just you're only using one? Or
I haven't tried it with a different browser. I'm using Firefox, and it's supposedly their latest version, which mm-hmm. is, 3 weeks old, if that.
Okay.
I'll try that.
Yeah, I would try it with your Internet Explorer and see if it reacts the same way. Google Chrome is another one to download and try. Maybe it's a problem with Firefox. It just hasn't been identified unless it's, with just a handful of systems, yours being one of them. They don't have any feedback from anybody on it, so they don't realize it's an actual problem. So one is to determine, is it across all products that are working on your system, or is it just, the Firefox being an issue? So, if it's Firefox being an issue because you test another browser and it works with that, then obviously Firefox needs to be updated, and hopefully that should fix it. If it still continues to be a problem with Firefox but it works with everything else, I would just contact Firefox through their they probably have a tech link, to report a bug and so forth, and
mm-hmm.
they'll ask you to probably describe what you have in your system, or they might have a simple thing you need to click on that just helps them identify what your system is using.
You don't have any I'm trying to make Internet Explorer come up, and it's taking its own sweet time.
Yeah.
If I'm having the same problem with another browser, do you have a suggestion? Besides throwing it out in the front lawn.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that.
If it's having a problem with another browser, it could possibly be having a problem with the rest of the operating system. So, 'cause that is another product. If you go online and look up or do a Google search on like Windows space and repair, or Windows XP home and repair,
mm-hmm.
there are guidelines to do that. Basically, you need your Windows operating system disk. And what you do is you boot up with that, and you need to have the administrator's password to basically go. It looks through your operating system with your permission, because you're the administrator.
Yeah.
And then it looks and compares files, and when it discovers that there's a problem file, it basically updates it with what should be fixed.
Unfortunately, Sony doesn't think you need a disk like that with their products. So, I won't take up any more of your time. We'll see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, there might be another way for you to repair it. So I would, see what suggestions come up. But that's one, where people actually have the disk.
Yeah.
So don't just stop there.
Good luck. Thanks, Peter. Jim in Clear Lake, we're on to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And thanks for Peter for appearing on your show for such a long time.
You bet.
We should get
enjoy it
in continuing education credits for it. But
you or me?
all the listeners. I've been listening to you for
long time.
But got a question. I recently broke down and purchased a new Dell. And so I've got Vista, and I'm trying to get used to that. But one thing, do you know much about scanners?
Sure.
What I'm looking to do is to be able to get a scanner that I can scan in. I used to take photographs, both slides and regular photos. And I don't seem to, the research I've done hasn't led me to much good results in scanning in either of those. Do you have any hints or any ideas on some units that might be better than others?
Well, I can tell you based on experience that scanning in pictures, okay, is not like something that you just wave the magic wand and it's done.
Okay.
Depending upon the quality of the photo, you will probably have to make some adjustments. The quality and the age of the photo. You'll have to make some adjustments with the scanner software to bring that image in so that you're happy with the results.
Okay.
And you're doing it one at a time. You're not doing it like you're lining them up and you're dropping them in this magical device. And you know, it's an automatic feeder, and it's like, okay, next picture, next picture, next picture. Every one of them needs individual attention. And you also may decide that you want to crop it when you're scanning it in, because you don't want the entire picture. You may want just maybe three quarters of it, because for whatever reason the edges are bad or you don't need it and it doesn't look good. So you just actually tell the scanning software to communicate with the scanner to only scan a certain portion of that picture.
Okay.
Other issues are, you know, the speed of the processor, how much memory you have in your computer, and then of course storage. Now with newer computers having typically more than 2 gigs of RAM, let's say 3 or 4, and storage typically 250 gig or more of disk space, that's typically not an issue.
Right.
So the higher resolution you scan a picture in, the slower the scanner is, because it's spending more time scanning each line, trying to get a good scan. So if you pick less pixels, let's say, 200 dots per inch versus 600 dots per inch versus 1,200 dots per inch, that dictates, number one, how fast it scans, and number two, how much storage it actually takes up, because the picture takes up a lot more space because it's more dense. So, as far as my experience with PCs and Macs and scanning, I would say that a Mac is probably going to work better if you're doing a lot of scanning, but it's doable on a PC. It's not that it can't be done. I'm just saying that a better solution, if you have a lot of scanning and a lot of work with digital photos.
Well, these regular photos.
Mm-hmm. So, those are some considerations. And then, the photo editing software, whether or not you use some version of Photoshop or anything else, will allow you to play with the image and make changes or corrections to, dimness, brightness, contrast, mm-hmm. sharpness, and things like that.
One of the guests that I have regularly on my program is Jack Socha, mm-hmm. who talks about digital cameras, and I'm trying to remember his website.
Well, he had mentioned about using TIFF files.
Yeah, TIFF files are large files, and that's one format of a picture. It could be a JPEG. You can convert it to other formats.
AW stuff.
TIFF is another file format. So You know, it matters what format it's in depending upon what you want to do with the picture. But a typical picture off of a digital camera, which can also be from a scanned-in image, can also be a JPEG. So, and those are typically, I would call, lighter in weight. They're not; they don't take up as much storage.
Mm-hmm. And Jack's address, web address, is acpress.com. It's acpress.com. And I know he has lots of information about all kinds of things relating to digital photography, but I know he's got information on there on scanning, too. So.
But there is no magic.
No, there's no magic solution.
And I remember in the last show he talked, someone asked about scanning, and it's you got the computer, you know, whether or not it's low or high res, you know, and how, you know, how fast it's going to scan. And, you know, everyone, it just takes time. And that's why, you know, if you go to a service and you say, hey, I got 500 pictures, you know, can you scan them in for me? You know, and you look at the quote on it, and you're going to go, oh, my God, might as well do this myself. That's why.
Thanks for calling. You know, there's a scanner related question here from Karen, who emailed us and says, I have an HP printer scanner that's always worked great. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, I'm unable to scan anything, and I get a message that the software is incompatible with Vista. Microsoft then tells me that it will look for a solution and then tells me that none are available. I know that the scanner was working up until a month or so ago, and I haven't changed anything.
Yeah, you want to look for the solution from HP. There might be, either you go to HP's website and look for an update on your all-in-one model, or another thing would be to actually uninstall it and reinstall it. Sometimes some of these updates kind of step on themselves and run interference and cause a function to not work. So, I've had that happen. It could be actually in my office. We have an automatic document feeder, which also has a slide adapter, but we never use that because we don't have any slides to scan in. But that's another thing in itself. But we also want to fax across the network, and HP for some reason never thought that someone that would have a scanner on their computer might want to fax through the network.
Oh.
So they're incompatible.
Oh.
So there's no, so the person that has the scanner can't fax through the network because the HP products don't get along.
Oh.
So anyhow, you know, check with their web. I would check with HP's website to look for a solution. And if you can't find a more recent update, then the next thing that I would try to do would be to do the uninstall and go through and reinstall the printer.
Let's go to Richard in Oshkosh next. Richard, hello to you.
Good morning. I upgraded my computer, been upgrading my computer lately, and I want to put in a new motherboard with a dual-core processor, and I'm running Windows XP Pro. What software do I need to get to... because everybody says that I need a 64-bit processor or something. Do I have to change any software to get to that point so everything works smoothly?
So you're looking at changing the board, the system board within your computer?
Yeah, I'm changing the board and the processor.
Okay.
Because I got all new stuff that I've been upgrading, you know, new... DVD burner, new DVD reader. Mm-hmm. I got scanners, I got printers, I got a whole bunch of stuff, but it seems to be running slow. And when I'm trying to burn some DVDs, and they said, I was listening to your program before, and it said that, you know, for people that are doing photos or DVD backups, mm-hmm. that you need so much processor speed and memory for it to work properly. So I got a deal where I can get a dual-core processor and double the RAM for less than $400 and just add all of my stuff onto it. But what software upgrade do I need to do to make it all work properly?
So do you want to upgrade your Windows XP? Is that?
Because I got Rexp Pro, but everybody that I know that has the newer systems have a 64, HP Pro 64. What do I have to do to get to that 64 edition?
Well,
got just XP Pro.
Yeah, there is one out there. You just have to find one. You probably would have to look on a place like eBay for a version of it, because I don't think you'll find it for sale, you know, at a store, or I don't know if a place like Tiger Direct or CompUSA, if they still have copies of things like that.
I was thinking, you know, like maybe online, maybe they might have Microsoft has an upgrade for 64.
Microsoft basically has stated they'll continue to support XP, but they're for a while, but they're not making, you know, any major upgrades to it, and they're not selling it. There was a brief period of time where they stated they were going to stop selling it, and then they actually came back and were allowing the manufacturers to ship computers with it, because the business world hasn't made that full switch over to Vista and then the upcoming Windows 7.
Yeah, because nobody I know that that has Vista really enjoys it.
Right.
They go back to XP Pro or XP Home.
Right. Now, here's the thing. You know, I was so disenchanted with what they did with Vista that I haven't really paid much attention to Windows 7, but I believe I've got it on my website. There's a link where they're shipping it October 22nd, yeah. I believe. So what may make sense for you is to go out there and look at some of the comments and opinions as related to Windows 7 and see, based on the upgrades that you've made to your computer, whether or not it makes sense to go to that Windows 7, skipping Vista, because it may have fixed some of the issues that were there with Vista.
And I know Stanley Miller from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had a recent article on Windows 7 and some of the things that it's offering. And that might not be a bad idea.
Well, I know there was a Windows editor, Brian Livingston, that was like, XP is not for me, and then Vista came out, and he still, you know, does Windows electronic newsletters and writing and so forth. I haven't even looked to see what he says about Windows 7, but you know, he was frustrated with XP and stating XP not for me, and he does a lot of work with XP now, but I know that Vista's not been well received in the business community. But Microsoft's going to have to do something to change, and hopefully they've made it better with Windows 7.
Well, Stanley Miller likes it, although he said he was actually had two experts show off some of the features. Some of the two Microsoft people came in, and he said it was an experience that felt like a bit like being hit in the face with a fire hose, a very polished and professional fire hose, but still a rush of information that took the good part of an afternoon to get. But he does talk about some features that he really likes. Mm-hmm. So there's some new simplifications in Windows 7 that sound pretty promising.
So it might make sense to do some research, see what Windows 7 might have for you based on your changes, and like I said, you can go out there and look probably on eBay, which to me is an environment that brings buyers and sellers together that normally never would have, you know, seen each other, met each other, and there's probably a version of XP 64-bit out there for you, so
give it a shot. Thank you very much for calling. I want to go back to, I think it was our first caller who wondered about shortcuts, getting the shortcuts on the 2007. Gail emailed us and said Office 2007 will accept all the 2003 shortcuts. You just have to know how to get all the way back to the end of the string from memory. She says, I went to a copy of 2003 and made lists of all the shortcuts I used. They are now posted next to my computer.
So, good idea.
Yeah, so that's what she did. And Tim in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Tim. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Larry and Peter.
Hi.
Peter, I'm wondering if you could give a brief video streaming 101. I'm totally frustrated with watching video online, and I can't. I don't know enough about computers to know if it's just totally my hardware, or are these different providers sending out video that is just varying quality or varying speed.
Yeah, so where are you trying to watch the video? What from where?
PBS, Fox, NBC. It's just all. I've watched golf tournaments, you know, major golf tournaments, and one tournament I'll be able to watch the entire tournament without an interruption. Another one I'll watch it for 5 minutes, and either it'll buffer or completely freeze, and I need to, you know, go back and find the website again and go through the whole process.
Isn't that maddening? That's happened to me. You used a good example because that happened to me too.
So, what kind of computer do you have in terms of memory and how old is it? What's the operating system?
It's about a year old. Windows XP, 4 gigabytes RAM. 256 megabyte video card.
Okay.
My DSL is Verizon 100 kbps.
Okay.
And, you know, I guess what I'm scratching my head about is I watch quite similar websites and or videos, and one will buffer every 15 seconds, and another one will, you know, I'll just be able to watch it all the way through. And I'm thinking, if it's my hardware, why would there be such a variation?
Yeah. I don't think it's your hardware.
I think actually what's going on is the other side of the equation. You're dealing with a variable that you don't know, which is part of it. You know, you tell me that you have good performance. Another part, you say you have really lousy performance. And based on your hardware configuration that you stated, it sounds like you've got all the right things. And what I see on the other side of the equation is probably problems with their web traffic either being too heavy or their servers not being able to push out fast enough because they've underestimated demand. And if you go back to years ago when they started doing internet broadcasts, including WPR, there were licensing issues. So you couldn't get on because you were user number 101 and they only had 100 licenses. And people were constantly fighting to battle in when one would drop off, who would get the next one. So there were bandwidth and licensing issues. And back then it was slow, so if you're using like a dial-in connection, you know, it'd be even more frustrating because you'd be sitting there waiting to, you know, just see if it would even connect, and then you would never connect. It would tell you, you know, it's not available. So I think based on what you've described, you're not getting any feedback that says your software's out of date, you're seeing the video, but it's choppy or the buffer. You could... You know, whatever you're using for the video player, there's Windows Media Player. You can use some other Real Player can show video. You could try another player, QuickTime,
and see if that helps, but I
think it's not the player. It's probably the other side that's having a problem pushing out the signal and dealing with their traffic.
Yeah, I'm convinced of that.
Thanks, but you can try. You know, there's no reason why you couldn't download a version of QuickTime or Real Player, you know, or if you're using one of those, you know, and compare it to Windows Media Player or whatever you're using and, you know, see what it's like.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant here on the Ideas Network. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. And Pete, you, this time of the show, we always have a list, or you always have a list for us, a top 10 list of great places to go on the web. And what have you got for us today?
Oh, they just keep getting better. There's actually a new book. I put a link up there. It's called The New Community Rules, Marketing on the Social Web. So this, in the last, the first 10 years of the web, they talked about how we spent our time being getting connected. Now it's how we're connecting to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the social web. This first one, and if you go to infostar.com and click on the top 10 archives, scroll to today's date, or just click on the current top 10, you'll get the same list. The first one is called Bicycling World, and they claim to be one of the largest collection of bicycle tours online. So if you're looking for a place to go bike riding around the world, there's 85 tour suppliers, 1,500 plus unique bicycle tours. And I scan through, looks pretty interesting. You know,
cool.
They rate them based on difficulty and things like that, and costs, obviously. if you're looking at the real estate market for buying or selling, a lot of resources out there. So there's another one I've never heard of before. It's called Trulia, Trulia.com. And I linked to a bunch of the others, so they're all there in one spot for you to use. The next one, number three, is an online shopping tool that claims that they search through 320-plus million products and helps you to find coupons, sales, and local shops and discounts.
Oh.
And I put other shopping assistants up there, but this one is called The Find, TheFind.com. We've talked about this before about free photo sharing sites, and this one is called photobucket.com.
Okay.
And I linked to a bunch of the others. I probably didn't link to all of them, but I linked to a handful of them. This next one is a social networking resource to help you keep in touch with your online world. I also put links up there to Twitter, Facebook, Dig, and all the other social networking things. It's called PeopleSound. So people and then SOUND.com. And Larry, I handed over you my little cheat sheet on 10 hidden features of the iPhone. Where did I find that? It's at gadgetophilia.com. And it's a resource that claims an obsessive fascination with gadgets. So that was number
That's
six.
That's some pretty good tips there on the iPhone as well.
Yeah. This next one claims to be a respectful community of creative people who are passionate about sharing videos. So you would think, oh, you must be talking about YouTube. No, that's YouTube is everyone sharing videos.
Yeah.
This one is called Vimeo, Vimeo.com. And they also have, I believe, like an HD feature. And people talk about, you know, should they post to one or the other? And someone said, just do both. So anyhow, that was number seven. If you've heard of the semantic web, and Tim Berners-Lee has written about this, he's the claimed to be the inventor of the web at MIT, and the semantic web is the web that we're actually participating in now. This next resource is called Twine, TWINE.com, and it's a semantic web application. And it's an online resource for you to collect your online content, including videos, photos, articles, web pages, products, and bring it all together by topic so you have it in one place and can share it with anyone you want.
Ooh.
So that's how the semantic web is supposed to move forward and work for us. And number nine is a relaunch of fedspending.org, and it is now called USA Spending.gov, and it's basically about how our government spends money, and this is all the data access points, and it brings it all to you so you can see everything in all its glory. And number 10 is, if you ever want to trace or track a network's IP route, so for the techies that are out there, you know, What path are you connecting to the internet, or how is your device being hooked up? There's a site called traceroute.org, And I also put links to some of the other tools because there are some neat tools that are actually visual tracers that show you visually how things are being connected. It's pretty interesting, but it's more
cool.
For a nerd or a geek.
And go to infostar.com and take a look at the top 10 list, yep. And there they'll all be.
Yep, you'll be busy for a while.
Dick in Gordon, Wisconsin. We'll turn to you now. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
My problem is the computer seems to be slowing down, and it's running even when no one is on it. You know, the fan is going all the time. And I call up the task manager, and I notice I've got 46 processes going. Is there some way I can take these processes off, and would that speed things up?
Now, which operating system are you using?
XP.
Okay. do you know about the applications running in your system tray in the lower right side?
No.
Do you have, like, a bunch of little pictures?
Yes.
Okay. Typically what you can do is, not all of them, because some of them might be, like, antivirus programs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if you want to methodically, you know, make note of what you have turned on, and then you could painstakingly go through each one by one, to figure out which one. If you can't really tell by what they are, you know, what it says,
right?
You can remove them from your startup and see how that affects the performance of your computer. So how do you do that? If you click on start and then run and then type in msconfig, and then hit the...
What was that again? MS?
MS, for, it's short for MS config.
Okay.
So msconfig. And hit the enter. And then go to the startup tab. You'll see a bunch of checkboxes that probably have checks in them. Mm-hmm. So every time you uncheck one of those, it's going to probably remove something from your system tray, that's those little icons on the right side.
Okay.
So there might be some things that you have there that are loading, that are taking a little slice of the system process or your CPU and resources, but you don't really need it there. I know Adobe puts an indexer, and most people don't need an indexer. RealPlayer might put itself there, and you don't really need RealPlayer. Google Updater, to me, doesn't really need to be there. And an antivirus you want to have there, but you might not want to have Windows Messenger there, you know. So the more of those that you have there, the more it takes up of your computing power and the slower your system typically gets.
Okay.
Now, how much RAM do you have in your computer?
512.
512. How old's the system?
Oh, boy. Three years old?
Okay. You may want to do a little research and see how far you can upgrade your system to as far as RAM. Windows XP really likes memory, and I would say if you can go up to at least 2 gigabytes of memory, it's definitely going to improve the performance of it.
Okay.
But aside from doing the stuff that we mentioned and changing the startup and getting rid of some of those apps that are running in your system tray, adding RAM is gonna help.
Yeah,
and the other thing is, if you're, I don't know what size hard drive you have, but I know a lot of people, if you've listened over the years, we talk about this, is to right mouse click on your recycle bin, click on properties, and then resize the drive down to about 1%, and then that frees up space. And then also, if you click on start and then programs and then accessories and then go to system tools and then system restore and then click on the change settings and change that default from 12% down to 1%, you free up almost 20, you know, at least 20% of your hard drive space that Windows is allocating for its own use. And why do I bring that up? Because if you do decide to add memory, what Windows does is it creates what's called a swap. It needs what's called swap space. And when you bump up the size of the memory in your computer, it increases what it needs for that swap space. You don't really have much of a say over that. You do, but I don't want to get into that because most people don't want to play with that. But you will need some extra drive space. And by freeing it up through the recycle bin and the system restore parts that I mentioned typically is enough so that when you bump up the memory, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And let's see. Robert in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you. I want to change the default email in my system. I'm using Gmail, but for some reason or other, the default email seems to be Microsoft Office. And so when I go to a website and try to communicate with them through their website by email, it always turns out that I'm using Microsoft Office email instead of Gmail. How do I arrange it so that Gmail is the default email?
That's a good question. I haven't specifically done that, but the way to change what's going on is when you click on somebody's email, it's launching Microsoft's email from the system. And I'm just thinking that it's probably in the control panel, and there might be a link in there for changing email settings. If Gmail is Gmail should be, I would think there's enough Google presence out there that there's probably a setting in there to change it to be Gmail for the default email.
When I go to that change of settings, mm-hmm. I'm offered five different versions of what I think are Microsoft programs, but there's no way I can write in the word Gmail.
Yeah. Is there any way you can add?
I couldn't figure that out.
Mm-hmm. I would. What I would do then is a Google search on setting Gmail to for default email. Mm-hmm. You know, and see what you know. You might have to rephrase it a couple of different ways, but see what comes up. Another thing is to go into Google Groups. So when you do a search on Google, there's actually a link which says more, and then if you click on that, and then there's groups, that's their online discussions, and do a search in there, and you'll see people talking about, you know, doing that, and mm-hmm. you might actually find the solution in that.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling.
Or Gmail might actually
Gmail might have it, yeah.
Have a link which, you know, just says click here for what you need to make changes to.
Yeah, I'd go there first.
Yeah.
I think I'd go there first. Good luck, Robert. Darren in Boscobel. Hello.
Hi, how's it going today?
Good.
Hi.
I have just a couple follow-ups, basically. As far as the lady talking about the release of Snow Leopard, I picked that up on Friday. I have a 24-inch iMac, I have an old white MacBook, and a MacBook 15-inch MacBook Pro unibody. I installed it on all three systems, and I saw a between a 35 and a 40% resource reduction. With
wow.
It. So it is definitely worth the $30 to upgrade.
No.
Kind of makes you wonder if they were holding back before, you know, and then
they didn't add any features, like major features with this version. It was all performance upgrade.
Right.
And it went from a, you know, 5% 64-bit to a 85% 64-bit, which might not mean much to most people, but obviously to some it does. And that's where the performance is going to be increased.
So if you buy, you're buying a new Mac hardware product with Snow Leopard installed, you kind of lucked out because you're getting better performance.
So anything from the white MacBooks on, I know anything Intel is going to be 64-bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything with that, with the Snow Leopard, you're going to want at least 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw between a 35 and a 40% increase.
Wow.
Or a decrease in resource used.
Wow.
So I can definitely hammer on my systems a lot harder. It is definitely worth the $30 upgrade, in my personal view.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as a gentleman was talking about wanting to install Windows 2000 and needing a CD for SP3, that is the Service Pack 3. As far as I can recall, With Service Pack 3 and XP, they removed the native installer support files for Office XP and 2000 and older. Mm-hmm. So you have to actually patch it for it to work. That's kind of like how they cut out support on Windows 2000 and eventually on XP. That's their way of forcing people to upgrade. So it will need to be patched.
Good information, Darren. Thank you.
Thank you. No problem.
I appreciate the call. Well, we had an email from Wayne, who you helped, you fixed a problem, a cooling problem for him earlier, and he appreciates that a lot. But now he has a new problem with sound. He's running XP Professional. Whenever I've needed to adjust the volume before, I just went to the taskbar to adjust it, click off mute, or adjust the volume. However, now the icon is missing from the taskbar. When I searched help and the internet, it appears that one can go to control panel, then sounds and audio devices, and click place volume icon in the taskbar to show the icon. When I go there, the checkboxes are not lighted, so I can't turn the switch on. Sometimes, consequently, lacking the sound function, I've been unable to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio stream any longer. That's bad. A fate not unlike bamboo shoots being driven under one's fingernail. That's from Wayne. And Wayne is in San Mateo, California.
Wow. Well, I can't tell you specifically where to, you know, click and make that work. But what I can tell you is that obviously it's a problem with the operating system communicating with the sound device. So one thing would be to try and actually do a reinstall of the sound drivers or the sound card. There's usually a CD or software that you can click on that goes through the installation and testing with the computer's speaker, or, you know, you're hooked up to external speakers or headset, so you can interact with it that way, which may actually force the Windows component to be fixed. Another is to look for a more current update online for what you have in your system and download that and try and work with it that way. How do you know what you have in your system? An application called Belarc Advisor, B-E-L-A-R-C Advisor. If you do a Google search on that, I've got links to it on the Virus Info Center page. I should almost call it the Tech Links page, but I have one of those too. But anyhow, download that application, and it does an analysis of hardware and software in your system, and then you can see what you actually have for a multimedia or sound card in your computer, and then do a search and see if you can find more recent drivers for that. If that fails, uninstalling and reinstalling would be another option. So in other words, reinstalling would be the first thing, or you could just say, okay, I'm going to uninstall it and then reinstall it. So that would be the second step. And then another one would be that maybe that the Windows operating system actually needs to be repaired. You can look and see if there are some downloads from Windows that specifically deal with that. Or, like I said earlier, if you type in Windows, your version of your operating system, and then repair and see what comes up. You could also go to Microsoft's knowledge base and do a search on that. And then they have tech papers and sometimes downloads and suggestions, you know, on how to fix a variety of problems.
All right. Let's go to John in Kenosha. Hi, John.
How you doing? How you guys doing today?
Good.
Hey, a quick question. I got a Windows XP. It's just probably right around 6 years old. I think this is right, 2.60 gigahertz, 504 bytes of RAM.
Okay.
All right, my problem is as such. You know, when I'm just farting around on a computer, maybe a little bit on the internet, it's fine. But when I start getting into, like, gaming, you know, on Pogo or something like this, something starts, the computer itself, as my old lady would put it, sounds like it's ready to take off because something's winding up, you know. Uh-huh. And it doesn't really slow down unless I X out of, you know, games like that, you know.
Sure.
So So what is that?
So you're saying it's kind of like it's like pushing your computer?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it doesn't necessarily freeze up or anything, but it has in the past, you know, but nothing that doesn't take just a couple seconds. Now, I've taken it in to have the disk completely wiped and everything put back on, and that helped for like a day. You know, and I've done all the things also that you've suggested about, you know, making sure everything's cleaned all the time, you know, going through the recycling bin, turning that down to one and the other thing. I've done all that, but it still happens to do it, you know. What seems to, what could cause it?
Now, you, when you say gaming, like what kind of games?
Well, like I said, Pogo will do it. And I only made that one because that was the minimal one I do. I usually sometimes play Diablo online, Diablo 2, you know.
You know, do you have a separate do you have a separate video card in your system?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Those kind of games really like to have, you know, separate video cards.
Okay.
I'm not saying, you know, you're using it, but you're really probably taxing. You're really pushing it to the extreme. So having a separate video card in your system, and, you know, with it being so old, you might actually be able to find ones fairly inexpensive. eBay might be a good place to look, or maybe Tiger Direct. They might have some in clearance. You might be able to get a PCI bus, you know, video card to improve performance. The other thing is, you mentioned 504 of RAM. You know, bumping up the memory also, and that's going to be, should be pretty inexpensive for your system as well.
Yeah.
So, and there are resources out there to check and see based on the model of your computer. If Crucial is one, Kingston is one, PNY.com is one. So there are places, you know, and you download Blark Advisor, helps you tell what you have, and then go to those resources and, you know, check it out.
All right, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, Peter, thank you so much.
Always goes fast, Larry.
Yeah, it goes. It flies. But you'll be back in, see, October 5th.
Yep.
Another month, and Peter will be back. And
we'll be in football season, full swing.
We'll be in full swing in football. Appreciate having him back, and he's coming on October 5th. Just to let you know, tomorrow's the first Wednesday of the month. And that means a visit from Scott Craven, UW Extension wildlife ecologist. We'll talk with Scott about the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.